This week, we turn our focus to the U.S. midterm elections and the possibility that the vote could change the balance of power in the U.S. Congress. Will Republicans or Democrats be calling the shots on how and where the U.S. spends its money? And how will the outcome affect America's relationship and commitments to countries in Africa? And the U.S. Green Card Lottery is open, but not for long. We'll have everything you need to know about qualifying for a chance to win an immigrant visa. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and a warm welcome. I'm Heidi Adams. Thank you so much for joining me. November 8th is the midterm election day in the United States, and voters will decide who controls the two chambers of the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate. And this year, all 435 seats in the House of Representatives will be on the ballot, as well as 35 out of the 100 seats in the Senate. Right now, Democrats have a slim majority in both houses, and that has allowed President Joe Biden to get important parts of his legislative agenda passed in Congress. If, however, Republicans gain a majority in one or both houses, they will have the ability to block that agenda going forward. Well, now, for more insight, we cross to VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. She is on Capitol Hill for us. Catherine, so nice to see you. Tell us, what are the issues likely to drive American voters to the polls this cycle?
Right. Well, Heidi, we know that far and away what's going to be driving American voters to the polls this year is the economy. In most public opinion polls about this election, almost three quarters of American voters say that they're worried about rising inflation, rising cost of living, and how the American economy is going to be coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic still. So they are saying that they want to vote on the person, those representatives who are going to be working for them to make sure that this situation is addressed. Now, of course, we know that Republicans are arguing that Democrats have had that chance and have not been able to revive the economy quickly enough. Democrats are pointing to some of those legislative gains that Biden was able to pass up here on Capitol Hill, saying that they really addressed that in terms of giving money to working families, climate change bonuses to get that economy up and running. So that's really going to be a matter of who thinks that Joe Biden has had these 2 years. Has he done enough with them? Of course, we also know that social issues are a big issue this election, too. We know that abortion, after the U.S. Supreme Court Dobbs decision earlier this year, that a lot of voters, independents, females, are registering to vote. That's a sign that they may come out in large numbers to make sure that they can protect the abortion rights.
Well, the jury is still out on whether 2 years is a long or short time in politics, of course. But, Catherine, President Biden's agenda hangs in the balance here. Which parts of that legislative agenda of his are most at risk? Should Republicans gain control of either one or both chambers of the U.S. Congress?
Well, I think we have to go back to abortion rights there. You know, Democrats up here on Capitol Hill want to make sure that they pass that federal protection for abortion rights. If Republicans, as you mentioned, are in control of one or both chambers, that is absolutely going to be blocked, and they will likely come through with their own federal measure, making sure that abortion is illegal all across the United States. We'll also see some blockage possibly of the right to marriage, gay marriage. We'll see, you know, a lot of different investigations into the Biden administration. That's a lot of time that will be consumed up here if Republicans do indeed take control.
Well, a lot at stake indeed. Catherine Gibson is a VOA's congressional correspondent. Catherine, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, U.S. lawmakers control the country's purse strings, and the next Congress will call the shots on spending in a range of critical areas. Let's take a closer look at what is at stake. And for that, I am joined here in studio by Steve Reddish. He is an executive producer here at The Voice of America. And Maria Bird joins us as well. She covers Washington, all things Washington and politics here, for a VOA's affiliate, Channels Television in Nigeria. Maria and Steve, a warm welcome to you both. Thank you so much for joining me here on Straight Talk Talk Africa. Neither of you a stranger to the show. Steve, what should we be looking out for in these midterm elections? What is at stake for the United States and for those outside of this country?
At stake for the United States is control of Congress, as Catherine mentioned, as you mentioned in the open. It's about all of the 435 members of the House of Representatives and a third of the Senate, about a third of the Senate. But what's really at stake is whether or not President Biden is going to be able to get the rest of his agenda enacted. He went for some of his agenda was enacted. He was able to get some of climate protection through. Medicare and Medicaid, help for the elderly as far as their health needs, and help for the poor as far as their health needs. He was able to get some of that through. Will he be able to get all of that through? Only if both chambers of Congress remain in Democratic hands. And so one of the things that we've been hearing lately, and what might be interesting for the rest of the world, is the concern of whether or not the United States will remain a partner, will remain as active a partner in the in Ukraine's battle against Russia. We have heard the House Minority Leader, the leader of the Republicans, Kevin McCarthy, say within the last few weeks that if Republicans are elected into the House of Representatives, don't expect a blank check for Ukraine. Whether or not that extends to other countries, it remains to be seen. But a Republican Congress will not likely be seen as friendly to be sending money, whether it be to Ukraine or any other countries around the world.
Maria, speaking of defunding some of President Biden's priorities, how would a Republican majority in the Senate and the House of Representatives, how could that affect President Biden's commitments that he has made, especially to African countries?
You know, you bring up some very key points here. We have to remember the Republican Party is almost split in two. You have those who are part of the MAGA Republican Party, which is people are often referring to it as, especially President Biden. And then you have those traditionalists in the Republican Party. And so I think the real question is, where is the Republican Party going to sit as a whole? As we know, most of the front runners and those who are running for office in the Republican Party, who are now down to the November 8th election time cycle, are those who have heavily been supported by President Trump. And so when we look at that, that is going to have a major impact on the Africa policies. Now, we also know that President Biden has made a commitment for greater partnerships, for additional resources, for an expansion of economic engagement and relations and trade relationships with Africa. And so the real question is, we're probably going to be looking at a stalemate within that. We do know that the Republicans that are supporters of former President Trump are heavily focused in on very key fundamental pieces. And Africa, I don't believe, is going to be one of those key areas that they're going to be focused in on. Now, we also know that when you look at what's happening with the economy, Africa's very much concerned about the U.S. economy, you know, focusing on how we're going to deal with this inflation, how are we going to deal with rising interest rates, at the same time knowing the good news of the job reports that just came out. And so there's a lot at stake here. We also know that how this has a heavy impact on the world economy as well.
Steve, what's your take on what's most at risk in Biden's agenda, even both domestically and abroad?
What I see most at risk is Biden's ability or inability, especially if the U.S. Senate goes Republican, he will be unable to get, on the domestic side, get judges through a confirmation process. The president nominates judges, the Senate confirms judges. If the Senate is in Republican hands, it is not likely that many, if any, of Biden's nominees to federal courts or the Supreme Court would be able to get a vote in the Senate. So that's number one. Going back to what Maria said as far as Republicans and the economy and Africa specifically, with interest rates high, that's a less of an incentive for businesses to invest in various different areas. to make either risky or whatever kind of investments. So until inflation can be handled, we're not going to see the kind of investment in various different areas of the world by American companies. With inflation high, inflation is higher everywhere else but the United States. That said, the economy is the number one thing. As well, many people in the United States, a recent poll by the New York Times showed that they see the threat to democracy here in the United States by election deniers, by those who followed former President Trump's claims that the 2020 election was rigged. The question of democracy is high on everybody's list, but very few people say it's the most important thing. They still, as Catherine mentioned, it's the economy.
Correct. Well, what, Maria, is energizing black voters mm-hmm. in this cycle, especially young black voters?
What's energizing is really, I mean, looking at what's available in the marketplace. We know that post-COVID, if we can even call it post-COVID, there's a, you know, the silent resignation happening. If you look at the young people today, they're really talking about wanting to have jobs that are impactful. They could care less about a corner office. They could care less about a $200,000 salary. They could care less about a parking lot. What they want to know is what kind of impact are they having on the larger world. They're very concerned about abortion rights issues. They're very concerned about the economy. They're very concerned about education, which has not changed, and as we know it, since we can remember. And so those are some of the key components that are going to bring them out. But what we also know is that African-American women are largely going to go out to vote. They were a large part of the last election cycle, and they will be this time. The greatest challenge is African-American men. Where will they sit? Because many of them are being pulled by the Republican Party just due to some of the challenges that exist for African-American men and how the Democrats have responded to that. So that's going to be, I think, a real area the Democrats are going to have to focus in a little bit more on and are likely going to over the next couple of days. You're starting to see some of the larger, you know, former President Barack Obama is out. President Biden has a whole tour that he's doing. So I think that's going to be the question, is how many are going to really be able to respond to the needs today? Because even though employment rates and there's job in the job market is expanding, in the African-American community, it's still suffering. And so who's going to respond to that need?
Steve, very briefly, speaking of former President Barack Obama out on the campaign trail, we're also seeing former President Donald Trump out there. But Barack Obama has been decrying what he calls the lack of basic civility and the lack of democratic norms in American politics today. Very briefly, and I know it's not a lot of time, but how would you describe the state of American politics today?
Tense. As tense as I've seen in my lifetime. I lived through the 1960s and the political assassinations of the 1960s. And the anti-war protests there. I saw and experienced what happened in the late 70s when the economy tanked and American hostages were taken by Iran, and that was a tense time in American politics. Now, there's such bitterness between Republicans and Democrats and mistrust and misinformation between the two parties that this is perhaps the most tense time of modern American politics that we have seen.
Well, this is certainly going to be very interesting. Maria, how very real is the fear that former President Donald Trump himself might be making a comeback?
I think that is a very real reality that I think many are facing and beginning to understand. I think that as you look at what's happening with these midterm elections, and you look at really when you talk about we're in a time of reconstruction in some way. It's time to look at, you know, how our infrastructure, and when you listen to the Republican Party, they're very heavy in having an answer to how they will address that. And so former President Trump coming back in, I think, is a reality. I think that what we've seen with Supreme Court Justice John Roberts putting a temporary hold on the tax returns being released for former President Trump is all part of the plan and the strategy that when we look at the next election cycle, that he will be a part of that.
And it's a fear on one side. I mean, there is enthusiasm on the Republican side of a return of Donald Trump.
But as Maria mentioned about the split in the Republican Party, Donald Trump controls maybe 30% of, really controls about 30% of that. The rest of them are go along to get along, and how we'll see Where the rest of that 70% of the Republican Party falls is going to be very interesting over the next 2 years.
Maria Burt, Steve Reddish, this is interesting indeed. We'll have you both back again. Thank you so much for your insights and some analysis here. I do appreciate it. Well, still to come here on Straight Talk Africa, the U.S. green card lottery is open, but as we said, not for long. We'll tell you what you need to know to win a chance to apply for an immigrant visa. Stay with us. Keep it right here on Straight Talk Africa. We'll be back after the break.
Medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Covering the continent every day from east to west, north to south. That's VOA Africa 54. We bring you the latest news and development from Africa. Politics, health, tech, and everything in between. We're on it. Our network of reporters and analysts are on hand to add perspective to all our reports. Join me, Esther Githui-Ewart, Monday through Friday, right here on VOA's Africa 54. With Straight Talk Africa here on The Voice of America. Welcome back. Have you ever heard of the U.S. Green Card Lottery? Well, it's a program that gives people from countries with low immigration rates to the United States a chance to apply for a U.S. immigrant visa. Now, the lottery window is open right now, but it closes on Saturday, November 5th. And here to tell us how it works is Johanna LeBlanc. She's an immigration law expert and the managing partner at LeBlanc Global Consulting. Johanna, warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Great to see you here again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Johanna, this is very interesting. I've never tried anything like this. So you tell us, how does one become eligible for this? Which countries are eligible, especially for our African audience? And what kind of people are eligible for this?
Right now, the only country that is not eligible is Nigeria. And the reason being is because Nigeria has had 50,000 people or more to enter the United States over the past 5 years. And there are numerous other countries from Latin America and across the world that are also not eligible. But in terms of who is eligible, you have to be a national of any country on the African continent except for Nigeria. You could be single, you could be married, you could be a student, you could be here on a tourist visa and still apply. So the list is very expansive in terms of who can apply. But applying and actually being selected are two different stages, right? So you could apply, but once you apply, you meet the requirements such as the education requirement, or if you're not educated, in terms of having a college degree or even a high school diploma or something that's equivalent to it, you'll need to have some kind of work experience, 2 years of experience within certain fields over the past 2 years or so. However, what's important to note is that once you've been selected, you have to prove everything that you've said. So if you say that you're married, you have to prove that you are indeed married by showing a valid marriage certificate from a government that is recognized, right? And if you say that you have a high school diploma,
Where is that high school diploma? You have to be able to furnish evidence in order to move forward to the next step of the process. And also, I think it's important to know that you could be a national, you could be a Nigerian national, you could be a national of Ghana, for example, but yet you're living in Ghana. Does that mean you are qualified? Absolutely, you can still apply.
Now, on top of being lucky, you need to have all those other things going for you. But how, Johanna, does the actual selection process then work? Because this isn't about just winning a green card. You win a chance to apply, right?
Absolutely. The process, millions of people apply, and the process is incredibly difficult to be selected because people are selected randomly by a system. And as I said earlier, once you're selected, you still have to furnish evidence, right? And if you are a married couple, for example, you can apply with your children and your spouse.
So you can bring your family.
Absolutely. And so you can apply for your spouse and your family, and your spouse could also apply, right? So now you have two chances, right? You've been able to apply twice, but you cannot apply individually more than once. But as a family, your spouse can apply, or you can apply with your family.
So Johanna, what does a green card give you as an immigrant exactly? I mean, quick questions here. What's the length of stay?
A green card is the green card. You're eligible to live in the country for as long as you want. And what's also important to note is that there are, as a green card holder in America, you are eligible for a host of services like social programs, right? Healthcare and all sorts of benefits and the ability to have employment at various institutions. But what's also important to note here is that within 5 years of having a green card, you can apply to citizenship. So it is a surest pathway to citizenship into this country.
I find some of this a little bit confusing, not the process and all of that, but, you know, there's so much talk in the United States around immigration, a very heated debate, and people being made to feel unwelcome. How come the U.S. is then giving this opportunity? What does the United States hope to accomplish with this green card lottery?
I think the United States understands that this nation was built on the back of immigrants. This nation also understands the contribution of immigrants currently living in this country. The United States wants to attract some of the best and brightest from all over the world. What's interesting is that even though you're not required to have a PhD, you're not required to have a master's degree to enter under the diversity visa lottery program. However, what we have seen is that the program attracts some of the best and brightest all across the world. So America understands the importance of bringing in that ingenuity to further build this nation, to ensure that this nation maintain one of the most powerful countries in the world. And again, immigrants are the fabric of this nation. They contribute heavily to the U.S. economy in so many different aspects like science, math, law, and so forth.
Johanna, and of course, does this change according to administration? I mean, does this open every year? How does that work? And should another president come into power who, you know, doesn't feel quite so welcoming, does this process change?
Well, we saw under President Trump that he had concerns with the diversity visa lottery program. He indicated that folks should be able to enter into this country based on merits, right? But the unfortunate reality is that the visa lottery process is probably one of the surest ways to come into the United States, unless you have families in the country, you have an unemployment opportunity. Let's face it, most people don't just get a visa to come and work into the United States, right? It is incredibly hard to secure. Of course, the visa lottery process is just as difficult, but that is one avenue. And some have said that it should be based on merits. But the caveat is that when it comes to immigration, the president of the United States has a huge influence on what happens. And usually the Supreme Court sides with the president, because if the president can make an argument, this is in the national security interest of the United States to perhaps cancel this program or not to utilize this program during his administration, the president could very well get away with that, unfortunately, because the Constitution gives the president so much authority when it comes to immigration.
Johanna, give people an idea of how much wherewithal one needs to come to the United States to make a life, at least get started here. I mean, people have varying stories, that is true. But, you know, what should you be prepared to pay for out of pocket? Because, you know, we always hear stories about people saying we came here with $5 and $2. Yes, but that was another lifetime ago. What should people be prepared to spend to build a life in America?
Absolutely. If you're one of the lucky ones who's chosen to come into the United States and start a new life, congratulations. But just know that America is incredibly expensive. but at the time of being selected, you would be eligible to find a host family, right? The question is, how long will this host family give you, right? Can you live with this host family for 3 months, 2 months, a year, right? Because you still have to secure employment. You have to get a car. You have to get a Social Security card. You have to get yourself prepared to fully integrate into the American society, and it can be quite costly. And what people need to also understand is that your host family is not your sponsor. Your host family simply says that you can live at my address for a specific period of time, and that is based on what is agreed between you and the host family. But America is very attractive for a lot of people all across the world. Because although here in America, we are dealing with inflation, with a very tense democracy right now with the different parties, right, with the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, we have a host of challenges when it comes to student loans, right? But America is still very appealing to most people because there is a slither of hope that exists that if you work hard, if you play by the rules, if you go to school, if you follow the law, if you follow the rules, that you can be successful. And I think that is what makes America so much attractive to so many immigrants all across this world.
I think we all come from tense democracies these days. But Johanna, can you just quickly, just briefly tell people about what they need to know even to even apply or to even get into this lottery? Although the more you talk, I'm like, is this really a lottery? Because it sounds like a lot of administration here. But what do people need to know about just applying? Because it is free, right?
Absolutely, it is free. And be aware of scammers because there are a host of companies and individuals that are taking advantage of the vulnerable, telling folks, if you pay me a certain amount of money, your chances of getting the Visa lottery is much greater. But this process is free. Now, if you need assistance because you're not tech savvy, you can go ahead and find someone and pay them to help you with the application. But if you can read, you can pretty much complete the application. It's fairly easy. It could take about 30 minutes to complete. Just make sure that when you, at the moment that you open the application, you have all of your documents with you, right? So that you can input the information into the system. That is one. And two, just be honest and be truthful in the application process, right? And also, thirdly, the application is on statedepartment.gov, right? dvprograms.state.gov. If it's a .com, if it's an EU, if it's a CPC, whatever it may be, it is not valid. It has to be a .gov web address. So I just want folks to really understand, don't let people take advantage of you. It's a lot of con artists out there trying to make money off of individuals who may not be familiar with the process. And lying on the application is not going to help you to win, because indeed, once you become eligible, you still have to meet with a consular officer at the U.S. Embassy at some point, and you have to furnish evidence of everything that you have said on your application.
Wow, that's a long process. But Johanna, thank you so much for helping breaking it down for us. Johanna LeBlanc, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. And if you would like to try your luck, just go to the U.S. Embassy website for your home country, and you can register online there. Registration, as we said, is easy and it is free. I don't know about easy, though. Also, go to our Facebook page. You will find the link to the application there. It is VOA at VOA Straight Talk Africa. And that is where we will leave it for this week. Thank you so much to all my guests. And of course, thank you to you, our audience, for joining me. From our team here in Washington, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.